If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business, especially in today's economy. But over 31,000 businesses do know their numbers because they use NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/wallstreet.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, September 8th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Apple has revealed new and bigger models of its iPhones and added new features to the latest generations of its smartwatch and wireless headphones. But the biggest surprise from Apple's annual September event? Keeping most of its prices the same. On today's show, our personal tech bureau chief, Wilson Rothman, joins us to discuss how that choice could affect customers and the new features Apple is hoping to lure them with. That's after these headlines. An update to the Elon Musk Twitter battle. In a decision Wednesday, the Delaware judge who's overseeing the lawsuit over Musk's stalled takeover of the social media company allowed the billionaire to amend his countersuit to incorporate whistleblower allegations made by a former Twitter employee. Peter Zatko, the company's former head of security, filed a whistleblower complaint made public last month, accusing Twitter of failing to protect sensitive user data and lying about its security problems, allegations the company has denied. Musk also asked the judge to push the trial back to November. The judge denied that request, and the trial is set to begin October 17th. America's second-largest school district was hit by a ransomware attack over the weekend. The Los Angeles Unified School District didn't reveal details of the breach or the ransom request, but it said the attack was likely criminal in nature and that it led to a significant disruption. Cybersecurity experts and federal investigators have been called on to help look into the attack. And non-fungible tokens have been popular with art and crypto fans around the world. But now former U.S. intelligence officials are warning that terrorist groups and their sympathizers may turn to NFTs to get around efforts to cut off their online fundraising and messaging. A digital card praising an attack in Afghanistan last month is being pointed to as the first known NFT created and spread by a terrorist sympathizer. Joining us to discuss this is our illicit finance reporter, Ian Talley. Hi, Ian. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here. Appreciate it.
We have seen terrorist groups use cryptos, rely on the blockchain before. So how is the use of NFTs different here?
It is extremely difficult to remove from the internet. First of all, it's written on the blockchain. And secondly, that data is deployed throughout the entire sort of infrastructure in the cloud, if you will, of data. So as one of the former intelligence officials that I spoke to talked about it, you would have to destroy every node where the data existed throughout the entire system. And the only way the U.S. was able to take down Islamic State websites in the past is because it had sovereignty over the companies that had hosting and server infrastructure.
So if I'm understanding this right, I mean, we've seen terrorist groups use crypto financing before. This is something the government has flagged as a concern. But here the issue seems to be that now it's not just financing its message, that it could spread its message using the blockchain.
That's correct. So being able to take down the websites affected both the propaganda and the financing. They were able to raise funds by telling folks where to send crypto money or who was responsible. They were able to project their propaganda through the websites. But as those were taken down, there was the inability to spread that propaganda. If you can't take the propaganda down, then anyone who knows the appropriate address can read that propaganda. And the other part of the NFT is it can be traded. Now, it requires a platform to be able to do so, but the NFT can exist, and as it was in this case, it did exist on platforms for enough time that it could have been sold before the companies, the platforms, discovered them and then deleted the posting. But that tradability, it wasn't offered as a tradable NFT this time, but that doesn't mean that it can't be sold in the future.
All right, that's our reporter, Ian Talley. Ian, thanks so much for joining us.
Glad to have been here.
All right, coming up, Apple is giving customers more choices and bringing new features to its products. But that might not be the thing that gets customers to crack open their wallets. We'll explain after the break.
If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business, especially in today's economy. But over 31,000 businesses do know their numbers because they use NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/wallstreet.
Apple is sometimes accused of creating a walled garden, an ecosystem that's beautiful but locks users into it. For its part, Apple says it makes systems that customers want to use and that integrate well with other products and services it offers. That was the pitch from CEO Tim Cook at the company's big annual event on Wednesday, where it revealed new iPhones, a new Apple smartwatch, and updated AirPod headphones.
They're always with you, useful wherever and whenever you need them, and are designed to work seamlessly together. On their own, each is industry-leading. Together, they provide a magical experience.
To help convince users of their magic, Apple also made a surprise move. It's keeping prices steady. Joining us to discuss the company's approach and the new features it's bringing to its products is our personal tech bureau chief, Wilson Rothman. Hi, Wilson.
Hey, Zoe. How are you?
I'm great. So this is the event where Apple unveils its new line of iPhones. What do we get with the new iPhone 14?
Well, I think that one of the big things they did was they brought back a very popular phone from about 5 years ago, that plus-sized phone that so many people had, the 7 Plus or the 8 Plus. And then they kind of did away with that nice value. It was like a big screen, but for a decent price. So what you have now is the 14 Plus, which is an $899 phone that has kind of the lower specs of the 14, but the bigger screen of those Pro Max phones that have cost $1,100.
All right, so let's talk about some of the differences here, because if you were, you know, trolling social media, as I was during the event, you saw a lot of people comparing the iPhone 14 to previous generations of iPhones. So what is different in these new models?
Yeah, you know, the lower two of the iPhone 14s really do resemble the previous phones in a lot of ways. So I don't disagree with people who say they're almost indistinguishable, except for that one big size bump, because the 13 had a mini. We don't have a mini anymore. So that breaks the heart of some people. But sales-wise, that's not as big a thing. So the bigger size is what Apple was going for on the iPhone 14. Now, the iPhone 14 Pro has a lot of new things that are different and new. One of the biggest is that the camera, the top camera in there, is now 48 megapixels. That's up from 12. So it's a big jump for Apple that's always kind of played down the megapixel game. Suddenly they have this gigantic camera in there. Another important thing about the iPhone 14 Pro is that it has an always-on display. This is something that competitors like the Samsung phones have had, where basically the screen dims and you just see the really important stuff, like, you know, certain widgets or notifications and then the time. You don't have to like reach over and tap your phone, but it slows down the refresh rate so that it's not draining the battery. Normally the phone can refresh at like 60 times a second. This makes it refresh only around one time per second.
Let's talk about the other products that Apple brought out on Wednesday, because it wasn't just about the phone. And Tim Cook kind of made a big deal of this at the beginning, saying it's all about these products integrating together. So one of the things that they have is a new version of the Apple Watch. Can you tell us briefly what's new here?
One of the really cool things they added was a thermometer that can help with, there's an ovulation app and a period tracker that's already in the Apple Health kind of stack of programs. And this thermometer will help with that, will give additional useful information for women who are tracking their periods and ovulation. Another feature that's new to the regular Apple Watch is crash detection, where it uses motion sensors inside to determine whether you've been in several different types of car accidents, including rolling over and getting hit on the side. But the big news was a big watch It's going to look chunky on some people, but it is something that a lot of, you know, extreme athletes and people who do things, even like I do, I'm not an extreme athlete, but I love diving. The new Apple Watch Ultra, it's $800, but it has all these features that we haven't seen before. It is, as I mentioned, diving. It is a dive computer. It can go down, I think, around 130 feet. It's extremely rugged. It's got a 36-hour battery, and it's got an optimized battery setting so it can actually go even longer, up to 60 hours. So it's a monster of a watch, but it's kind of what everyone's been waiting for because on that high end, Apple hasn't really been able to compete with Garmin, which is kind of the big-time athlete's watch of choice.
The other thing they brought out is a new generation of their headphones. Did much change there?
So, you know, they look the same. They have longer battery life out of the box. So it's a 6-hour battery life. I think that's a 20-30% improvement. It's going to be noticeable for people. The case, you know, charging case together provides up to 30 hours of battery life, which is really nice. And they've also improved the noise cancellation. As you might know, there's a transparency mode. We call it the don't get hit by a bus mode. Like you're crossing the street, you hear a honk, you look up. You know, if you have full noise canceling on, you won't hear that honk, but if you push it into transparency mode, you will. So now they have something called adaptive transparency mode, which I think has more, like it's using more of the sensors that make noise canceling work, but it's doing more to like kind of figure out, maybe make it even easier to hear that bus coming or that hear that honking of a horn.
You know, overall, smartphone sales are down for the industry. People have been pulling back on buying expensive tech gadgets altogether. And Apple has seemed to, you know, defy that trend. But it did decide not to raise prices on iPhone models. What does this tell us about Apple's strategy?
I think that shows a conscious decision on the bean counters at Apple on their part to, like, not shock people with price. Maybe this inflation thing is scaring enough people and suddenly you hear, oh, the price isn't going up on this. Wow, that's great news. It's almost like a discount in an inflationary environment. I mean, that I do think that's a calculation, a marketing calculation that they're making, a bet that they're going to sell more because of that to offset whatever cost they're eating by not raising the price. The other thing is that the premium tier of smartphones, the 900 and up, have actually not experience any sales depression the way these lower end phones have. Overall, you find people are willing to hold on to their phones longer, but the people spending less money on their phones are actually more likely to hold on to them longer because they don't care. People like me, I'm a nerd, I like my phones, you know, I spent $1,000 on it, you know, last year, I'm probably going to sit out this year, but you bet next year I'm going to buy a new phone. I think it's justifiable for people who are, you know, have a lot going on in their phones that they want to have something that works and keeps up with the times. But it is true that there's a certain sales bracket that actually hasn't had a decline, and that's where Apple plays mostly in that sandbox.
All right, that's our personal tech editor, Wilson Rothman. Thanks for joining us, Wilson.
It's my pleasure, Zoe.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. For more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, you can give us a 5-star rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Join The Wall Street Journal for the WSJ Pro Sustainable Business Forum happening online October 13th. Take away practical advice on how to build a sustainability strategy that's right for your business. You'll hear from experts who will help you navigate the SEC's proposed regulations, complications of renewable energy, and risks along the supply chain. Together, we'll dig into these topics, providing you with ideas and insight you can use on day one. Register now at wsj.com/sustainablebusiness and save 20% on your online pass using code PODCAST.